here, before you even start, somebody's already heading through the door to the baptistry. Just makes you feel like you're off to the right start. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you this morning and give a lesson. As I've said before, and this is more of the same, my aim when I get up here is usually to give Christians something to help them in their walk from day to day. The fact is that most of the people that come here on a Sunday morning or at any other time are already Christians, and so that's the biggest part of my audience. Certainly want to welcome and extend an invitation to anybody here who isn't or who is visiting with us, that if you hear anything that's said today that you have questions about or you feel is incorrect, then please talk to me about it, and we'll find out. That's what we're here for. The lesson I've chosen this morning is one that I've given before, I think twice. I knew of the opportunity to come and speak probably a few weeks ago, and was considering what lesson to bring, and about 2 weeks ago, Dave talked about something in one of his lessons, and I was like, well, that about cinches it. I should do this lesson. Dave was talking about some of the difficulties that he has encountered on Facebook. And so I have a lesson that kind of touches on that. It's not specific to Facebook. It's kind of just on this concept of the internet and social media and some of the other things that we have available to us now that we may not have 10 or 20 years ago. It's good as Christians to always be able to, when something comes along that is new or that is different, look at that thing and say, okay, can this be used for good? Okay, can this be something which causes me to stumble in sin? And that's true of anything. And usually the answer to both questions is yes and yes. So the things that we're going to talk about today fall into that category. To do a lesson on, say, the entire internet and its impacts on us would be way too large. I can't cover all of those things. Likewise, I'm not going to cover every implication of every social network or technological advantage that we have before us today, and kind of limited what I have to talk about. You know, there are certain things that we're going to face in certain platforms and in certain situations that are different. All of these platforms, you know, things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, I can keep going. There are lots of them these days, and maybe fewer than there were a few years ago. But they're all a little different. So I'm going to talk about a subset of things. And really, this falls into kind of a series of mini lessons. Not really one main point, other than these are things that we ought to be thinking about, or things that we can get ourselves in trouble with in these platforms and in these environments, in these opportunities. Likewise, I'm not going to talk so much about the good things that we could be doing with them, but more on that question of what can get us in trouble or what can cause us to stumble when we are using these platforms. And like I said, this is going to apply not just even really to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, those sorts of things, but even to things like text messaging and email, depending. But nevertheless, a lot of this stuff, and one of the dominant platforms today is Facebook, so there's really no way getting around. When you leave this building today, you're going to remember this as the Facebook sermon, so I just go with it. All right? So we'll call it the Facebook sermon, and we're going to talk about a couple of things. So as I said, anything that is new, we ask ourselves that question, well, is it inherently good? Is it inherently bad? That's probably the wrong question. What can be good about it? What can be bad about it? We could look at something like Facebook or these other platforms and say, well, is it something that's inherently bad? So they had, you know, the movie a while back, and this was part of the poster. It's like, and we could look at this thing, Facebook, and say, yeah, you don't get to 500 million friends without committing a few sins, right? That's not exactly the movie poster. I changed it. And you might be right. But at the same time, that in and of itself is certainly not an absolute, because what about Jesus himself? He made himself a lot of friends. He is very popular among a lot of people. And He didn't do that. So at the very least, we could say doing it without that is harder. But nevertheless, these are not things that are absolutes. So we kind of have to be a little more mature, think a little bit harder about some of these things. So, as I said, we're going to touch on several different aspects, several different things that we ought to be thinking about and ought to concern ourselves with when we're using things like Facebook, text messaging, email. And so I'll dive into the first one. This is kind of more disconnected from the rest, but also maybe is worth putting first. Many of us here looking around are married. Many of us have family members who are married, maybe younger married, and they're people we, or friends that we want to influence, that are Christians especially, and we want to, you know, help each other in our walk with Christ and try and stay faithful to Him. And there are some, therefore, some uncomfortable truths that we should think about unfaithfulness and the digital social world. And by unfaithful in this context, the way this term is usually used is yes to our spouses. This is something that's very real, and I want to just kind of make this case. So there was a big infographic that I ran across when I was first preparing this lesson. The numbers have probably changed since then, but even, you know, probably about 5 years ago, I think, first time I prepared this lesson, they're pretty stunning. There's this big infographic, and I've broken it down into smaller pieces to get it to fit on the screen here today. But so here's an example of some statistics about social media in the courtroom, particularly in divorce law cases. So about 81% of members from the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers reported using or confronting information pulled from Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, and various other social networking sites in divorce cases. About 81% of them had this experience. And in that case, about 66% of that evidence that was presented in these divorce cases, presumably infidelity cases, came from Facebook. Another 15% from MySpace. MySpace isn't so much around anymore, but this kind of proves the point that it's not a particular platform. It's applicable across the line, also from Twitter, and there's some percent missing there if you add it up, so there's a few other smaller ones in there as well. Another little bit from the infographic said, in a survey, 1 in 5 adults use Facebook for flirting, and that 23% of men cheat and 19% of women cheat. Now, I don't know what their definition for that is, but that was, I guess, their self-reporting, probably, of whether they did, you know, using these platforms or stemming from using these platforms. So just another bullet point there. Here was another part of the infographic on avoiding a social network divorce. So that big bubble in the middle is one worth reading. Don't have secrets with your spouse, for instance. Sometimes if you reconnect with someone and become emotionally attached, you might find yourself sharing more with him or her than your significant other. Okay, let's substitute your husband or wife in here for us. Now, I put all these things up here, and you see them, you can read them, and I don't know if these numbers, if the advice that's being given, these things are likely or that can happen or surprising to you or not, but what you may find surprising is where this information came from. You might think that I got this infographic from James Dobson's Focus on the Family or from some other Christian or purportedly Christian publication. No. So all of the information and the context and the text here come from other places entirely. As I kind of mentioned, that first graph comes from the American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers. This is an association of divorce lawyers. I think I probably put these out of order, but I mean, that's their website. Okay, so these people have no monetary incentive to keep you out of divorce court. They have no scruples about helping somebody with a divorce, but the point is that even they realize that those numbers right there are true. And these other, I'm losing my mic here, these other items came from, over here on the right was sourced from a survey done by Huffington Post. And this one in the middle is from the chart blog on CNN.com, written by Ian Kerner, a sexuality counselor and New York Times best-selling author. My point is that all the stuff that I just presented, all the things that I just told you about, are things that worldly people have identified as problems. These are things that people in what we might be tempted to call liberal media, or people that are of a worldly mindset and of a worldview that is not centered around Christ or the family or anything else, are the ones that are bringing this to people's attention. And if that's the case, then we really ought to be concerned when we see these sort of things. Just another bit of additional context. Again, Caitlin Dewey, a writer for the Washington Post, I think in relationships and that sort of topic for that publication, writes a few interesting things that we might should pay attention to. She talks about, you know, this idea of using Facebook or even text messages or emails in our modern lives. And she says there are other things going on here as well. Conversing by text or direct message is so inherently one-to-one and so impossibly easy that the technology lends a kind of intimacy to its contents. A text can be sent from anywhere with anyone around, and no one else will know what it says. It's not just the concept of you can maybe more easily get away with this, but what she's saying is that the very way in which it is done makes it seem like there's an intimacy to it. There is something special about it because of that one-to-one nature of it. What else? She talks about the dual blessing and curse of choice. Now, again, from a completely worldly perspective, this person says the strength of a relationship relies on three things, her opinion. Broadly speaking, satisfaction, emotional investment, and the availability of alternative partners. And this is a very interesting insight, I think, what she says. And that is, this new research suggests, exactly what social media promises. Not constant temptation, exactly, but the constant casual reminder that alternatives exist. The constant casual reminder that there are more people out there, the more fish in the sea type of argument. It's a constant reminder that those people exist, which this person even recognizes as a danger to somebody who wants to maintain a faithful relationship. What we're talking here really about is targets of opportunity. And we understand this concept, and we understand this concept biblically. We talk about David, and we understand what he did in the spring of the year, 2 Samuel, chapter 11, verses 1 to 4. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah. But David remained at Jerusalem. So he's in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's not where he should have been. Geographically, not just vertically, okay? Wherever, whatever he was doing out to where he could see someone on the roof, he was not even in the right place in the country. So he put himself in this situation. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof of the king's house that he saw from the roof a woman bathing, and the woman was very beautiful. David sent and inquired about the woman, and one said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" So David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him, and he lay with her. Now she had been purifying herself from her uncleanness. Then she returned to her house. Targets of opportunity. That reminder that, or those opportunities being presented constantly, that those alternative partners that our Washington Post writer pointed out are there. And again, whenever we talk about David, we have to ask ourselves, do we think this can't happen to us? Because David, we always remind ourselves, was a man after God's own heart, and if anybody short of the sinless Christ was going to be able to resist something like this, then it should have been him, and he wasn't. So do we think this can't happen to us when we present ourselves with those opportunities constantly on platforms like that? Targets of opportunity is also something that's touched on a lot in the Proverbs. Proverbs 5 and verses 3 and 4 and 6. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Do not desire her beauty in your heart, and do not let her capture you with her eyelashes. If that strikes anybody as funny or strange, that particular thing is mentioned. Maybe it shouldn't, or maybe, you know, since we're on the topic, go out to YouTube and search for eyelashes and see how many results come up. Obviously, somebody thinks that those things work. So there's you know, since we're on the subject, do not let her capture you with her eyelashes. And then this is a really good passage on this. Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Right there, right? Is that where we keep that thing? Is that what we are carrying on it? Can a man carry fire next to his chest and his clothes not be burned? Or can one walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? So is he who goes into his neighbor's wife. None who touches her will go unpunished. The Proverbs continue. In 7 and verses 6 and 9, chapter 7, for at the window of my house I have looked through my lattice, and I have seen among the people, I have perceived among the youths, a young man lacking sense, passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness, targets of opportunity. Putting yourself in that wrong place in that wrong time. Come, let us take our fill of love till morning. Let us delight ourselves with love, for my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He took a bag full of money with him. At full moon he will come home. With much seductive speech she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. Anybody here ever gotten an email that looks a lot like that second section? Can't control so much what comes into your email. You can delete it. But there's nothing alien about what's written there in that second section. That's very much exactly what can happen to us. Okay, leaving that topic for a bit. Move on to another topic. And talking less about who we have relationships and how we have relationships with people, but what it is that we post when we have the opportunity to post something. Because these platforms, Facebook, Twitter particularly maybe, have really brought new meaning to the term peer pressure. Congratulations, 32,768 friends are watching every word, photo, and emoticon you post and are waiting to misinterpret, misquote, ridicule, and silently judge you. What would you like to say? Saw somebody say nothing. But what are you going to say? So you have a profile, you have a handle, you know, whatever it is, whatever they call it in the particular platform, and what are you going to choose to say in that medium? A lot of this boils down to a question like Galatians 1 and verse 10 poses, for am I now seeking the approval of man or of God, or am I trying to please man? If I were still trying to please man, I would not be a servant of Christ. We could take that and we can apply it here. We may not think to, but we absolutely should be thinking about this verse and apply it when we have the opportunity to post something on one of these platforms. You could even comically oversimplify what you see in this text right here by saying, who is it that we want to click our like button? Okay? You're going to post something on there. Who do you want to click it? Do you want people in the world to click it? Or do you want to be posting something that Jesus himself would click like on if you posted it? All right, which one is it? Robert, by the way, I was going to add this to my somewhat long introduction, asked me if I had a song for the lesson today. And I said, I told him, you know, kind of the title. And I said, I can't really think of anything. But that last one that he picked right before the lesson is actually really about as good as I could probably do. Let the beauty of Jesus be seen in you, his passion, his purity, his kindness. And is that the sort of thing that we're going to post when we have the opportunity to do so? Or are we going to have a tendency to think about those 32,768 friends and what they're going to think of what we post? There's another aspect of this, kind of something that Dave was alluding to when he talked about his difficulty, is also not trying to give offense. you know, even if we are posting things that we want to be something that Jesus would like, maybe from a theological standpoint, and we aren't so much worried about what it is that people are going to like. Nevertheless, Paul told us in 1 Corinthians 10, give no offense to Jews or to Greeks or to the church of God, just as I try to please everyone in everything I do, not seeking my own advantage, but that of many, that they may be saved. Now, does that contradict what we have right here in Galatians 1 and verse 10? No, but it gives us maybe some right and left bounds on what we should and we shouldn't do. Kind of trying to keep within both of those things. These are things we should be thinking about when we're posting. But what happens when we get on these platforms and we add friends and we create these relationships and these circles, and the people that are listening to us, or the people at least that can hear what it is that we post, we may get into that unequally yoked situation. 2 Corinthians 6 and verses 14 and 17, do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light with darkness? Therefore go out from their midst and be separate from them, says the Lord, and touch no unclean thing, then I will welcome you. And at the same time, we also have to remember that Paul had just written in 1 Corinthians 5, verses 9 and 10, yet he had also just written, I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people, not at all meaning the sexually immoral people of this world, or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters, since then you would need to go out of the world. So again, we have this balance to keep. We are still in the world. We still have to interact with the world. We're here for a reason, to have a positive influence on the world and to bring people, other people, out of it. But we have to balance these things. This is really kind of a lot to think about when you are putting things out there on these platforms. This is difficult, but are we even giving it that thought? Think about James and John in Acts 5, and they're brought before the council. It says, we strictly charged you not to teach in his name, yet here you have filled Jerusalem with your teaching, and you intend to bring this man's blood upon us. But Peter and the apostles answered, we must obey God rather than men. These are all things we need to be thinking about. When we have that opportunity to put stuff out there, we have the opportunity that people may read what we write, we really should be keeping an eye on, again, who is going to click that like button? Who do we want to click that like button? We don't want anybody to click the frowny face if we can help it. I think they've added that since I made this lesson, right? But who are we really, who are we trying to project? Are we letting the beauty of Jesus be seen in us as we post things? Again, moving on to another mini topic. Talking there a little about posting in the context of, you know, people out there that, you know, are influencing us in maybe a negative way and maybe exerting peer pressure on us to maybe not post things that we should post and maybe to post things that we shouldn't post. But what about the church itself? Your Christian brothers and sisters, they're out there. They're on Facebook. Sometimes, hopefully anyway, we do interact with them. We have interactions with other members of the church out there, and even our family members who maybe or hopefully are members of the church, and we interact with them. And what's going on when we do that? How does that work out for us? A coworker I had this lovely comic on his desk. He says, you seem upset. Perhaps you should post about it on Facebook. That will be sure to reduce the drama. And, of course, it's funny because it's ridiculous and it's the opposite of true, right? We tend to post things out there when we're angry or be a little passive-aggressive or maybe just generally be a little uncharitable towards other people. And when we do that, how can that affect the church? Again, just an interesting thing. Just about a month ago, somebody in Christie's family was telling us there was drama in one of the boards that was on, I think, Facebook that a bunch of that was used by their congregation, members in the congregation would be a part of it to distribute information or whatever. and somebody posted to that list, to that group, I think it's a group on Facebook. Did I mention? I don't think I did. I'm actually not on Facebook. I don't have an account. So in a way, it makes me maybe less qualified to talk about some of these things, but maybe gives me a different perspective of it. I signed up once an account for a congregation that I was working with, and so I got to see part of the process, but I certainly hear and learn enough about it through other people's, I guess you could say, oftentimes through other people's misfortunes with it, to know a decent amount about it. I'm also a technologist. I am a computer programmer, so I follow the news in the technology industry, and a lot of it gets wrapped up into this. But they had this group that was for the purpose of communicating among members there. And somebody posted information there about, I think it was COVID vaccine availability, that there were spots available if you wanted it at these locations at these times. And there was uproar. And some people were like, take me off this list, take me out of this group, I don't want to hear this type of information, I don't want to do this. And, you know, just that. Which we don't want. I hope we don't want that. And then, of course, as is endemic to these platforms, it's not just the people that are necessarily members of that group, or certainly not only people in your friends a lot of the times, and really that doesn't help, that see this stuff and can witness these things happening. So how can that happen, or how should this be working? How should it look? 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 10, this again touches also on a lot of the things that Dave has been talking about in our Wednesday study, right? 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 10, I appeal to you, brothers, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that all of you agree and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be not united in the same mind and the same judgment. So do we look that way? Does our profile and what we post out there look that way? And again, remember, this goes for members of your family, too, who it may be clear from there, and I hope it is, if you're a Christian, when you're posting these things and you're having these interactions with your family members even. Does this what we look like, or does it look like something different? 1 Corinthians 3 and verses 1 and 3, but I, brothers, could not address you as spiritual people, but as people of the flesh, as infants in Christ, for you are still of the flesh, for while there is jealousy and strife among you, are you not of the flesh and behaving only in a human way? And or does that characterize a lot of what we see, or what we may do, or what we may see from our family and our friends who are Christians on these platforms? Do we look more like that out there? Do we look more like that out there? Here's another, I think, really applicable section, though it may not seem like it at first blush. 1 Corinthians 6 and verses 1 to 8. When one of you has a grievance against another, does he dare go to law before the unrighteous instead of the saints? Or do you not know that the saints will judge the world? And if the world is to be judged by you, are you incompetent to try trivial cases? Do you not know that we are to judge angels? How much more, then, matters pertaining to this life? So if you have such cases, why do you lay them before those who have no standing in the church? I say this to your shame. Can it be that there is no one among you wise enough to settle a dispute between the brothers, but brother goes to law against brother, and that before unbelievers? To have lawsuits at all with one another is already a defeat for you. Why not rather suffer wrong? Why not rather be defrauded? But you yourselves wrong and defraud, even your own brothers. Now, I hope in the context you can see why I have this verse up here. If you understand this passage to primarily be here for the purpose of establishing a precept that we do not take other Christians to court or have lawsuits against another Christian, you're missing a major part and maybe the primary purpose of this verse. A major point and maybe the primary purpose of this passage is to tell you not to air your dirty laundry among your Christian brothers and sisters in front of unbelievers. And the courts is just one way that that can happen. But these platforms is definitely another one where that can happen. So are we doing this? Because this is another precept, this is another principle that we're violating, if so. It's kind of a big deal. Last kind of segment, it's mostly tied to the first. If I'm talking about all this thing, all these things that you may do and the ways that you may interact with your Facebook friends who are Christians, and you're like, oh, well, that doesn't really, hasn't been a problem for me. And if you think of why that is, and you think to yourself, well, actually, no problem. None of my Facebook friends are Christians. Well, here's a meme for you on that. All right. So, this is not the way it should be either. This is something that's like, if you were to just come to this from a vacuum, you know, you've never heard of any of these platforms, and somebody was to explain to you what Facebook is for, and tell you, well, it's a place where you can connect with your friends and converse with them about things that are important to you and things that are going on in their lives, and well, it sounds all wonderful, doesn't it? Too, but and it's not. But you would think to yourself, oh, well, probably a lot of my brothers and sisters in Christ would be on my friends list. But is that the case for us? Well, I hope it is, but I think it may be in some cases that it's not. We, again, going back to what Dave has been talking about on Wednesday, we have this given to us by Jesus Christ himself, and he says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. John chapter 13, and beginning in verse 34. Is this at all reflected by our social media profile? So we have a commandment, a new commandment from Jesus, that we love one another. This should show up in a number of places, and this is probably one of them. This is really what I'm talking about is kind of a side effect of a bigger problem that you hear people talk about from up here. And that's of keeping our church lives and our other lives separate, right? So we talk about our work lives. Now, there's a natural reason that that happens just because of geography. People in this audience probably don't come into your workplace. And likewise, your coworkers probably don't come here unless you invite them. But so this just kind of happens by itself. But if we let that spread into other things, and we want to make sure that we keep that list of church friends separate from our list of work friends or our list of friends that we have outside of church, we're trying to keep those things separate, then we have a problem. Then we have a problem, because when we're looking back to that second section about what we should post, well, nobody's going to see this. Or these people aren't going to want to hear what I would say to my brother or my sister. That could be a very serious problem. So if that slide applies to you, we should think about that pretty hard. We shouldn't be keeping our church lives and our other lives separate. Another thing we should think about is Acts chapter 2 and verses 42 and 47. So immediately after the events that we often repeat in Acts 2 and verses 38, this is the way that the church was described here in a few verses. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers, and awe came upon every soul. And many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. They were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. Again, does our public life in general, and for the context of this lesson, what we put on Facebook or Twitter, does that public life reflect anything that resembles this in any way? And if not, why not? The New Testament goes on. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 22 and chapter 4 and verse 8. Having purified your souls by your obedience to the truth for a sincere brotherly love, love one another earnestly from a pure heart. Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins. 2 Thessalonians 1 and verse 3, we ought always to give thanks to God for you, brothers, as is right, because your faith is growing abundantly, and the love of every one of you for one another is increasing. Have you ever been in a place or in a time where this can be said about you? This is what Paul was writing about the congregation in Thessalonica. Romans chapter 12, verses 9 and 10. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. And the question that I have to have for you is, do you even like your brother? I know I keep coming back to this word. I keep coming back to that button that's there. But is that not a manifestation of what is important to us when we're out there? What are we clicking? What are we putting out there, as I've talked about, that we want people to click? What is it that we want people to want to read? What do we want people to see? What do we want people to see about us? Okay, maybe there is a common theme through many of these lessons. Last passage, the one that I had Brother Carter read for us this morning, from Galatians chapter 5 and verses 13 to 15. You were called to freedom, brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh, but through love serve one another. For the whole law is fulfilled in one word, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. But if you bite and devour one another, watch out that you are not consumed by one another. And if that doesn't sum up the possible goods and the possible bads of Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, I don't know what does. These are things we should be thinking about when we're out there. Really, anytime, when we're out in the grocery store, or when we're out in the park or in our workplaces, or when we're here, we've been given a lot of freedom. We have a lot of opportunities. We have a lot of things at our disposal through the grace of God, His generosity towards us, the prosperity that we're given in this time and in this place. Are we using those for good, or are we using those for bad? Are we using those for Christ, or are we using them for the world? Who is clicking your like button? We have those opportunities. We have those freedoms that have been given to us. I hope that you're making good use of them, that you're having that opportunity to influence people for good, that you're having the opportunity to express love for your brethren. I hope that none of these things are difficulty for you. If they are, or if other things are of difficulty for you, we are brothers and sisters in Christ. We do like you. We love you. We want to help you with these things or with things. Anything that you have need of, if you need to be baptized into Christ today, we can help you with that at this time. If you need prayers, if you need assistance or just help, advice, anything, we love you. We want to give you that opportunity to do that at this time. You can come forward if you need as we stand and sing the song Selected.